Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, and this is Dave Isaac alongside Kimberly Isaac and Paul Alden in Houston, Texas, Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. And Kim, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, and I think we have Paul from Houston, Texas.
Do we?
We do.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Paul.
Yes, and how is Texas out there? How's the weather? How was that side question?
It's pretty decent. It's all right.
Just all right. Okay, it's beautiful here, 80 degrees, maybe 85, and that is Phoenix weather in the winter time.
Although Paul just got back from Bali, so maybe he had some beautiful tropical weather.
Did you? Did you have beautiful what is beautiful tropical weather?
I don't know. I'm just
that
craving.
Sounds hot and humid.
I'm kind of craving summertime at the moment.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I love it.
172 degrees. I don't know, Paul. I bet you're not in for 100. How was the weather in Bali? Let's ask that question.
Mid-80s, pretty humid.
Yeah, the humidity is the key, yeah. If it's mid-80s and dry, sounds like Phoenix, Arizona. If it's in mid-80s and wet, it sounds like Houston, Texas, doesn't it?
Pretty close, though. It's low 70s here today, so it's pretty nice.
Oh, that's not bad at all. Actually, that is good weather. Let's take the show over there. Okay, so Kim, and what do we got for today?
Well, first I just want to introduce myself for those of you listening. You haven't tuned in before. I'm Kim Isaac. I'm a co-host of this radio show. And I'm an autism specialist, and I specialize in working with teenagers and adults on the autism spectrum. And we also have co-host Paul.
And I'm Paul Loudon. I am a 31-year-old with, I was diagnosed with Asperger's, now just ASD. And I talk on the show about my personal experiences growing up and dealing with autism and how they relate to whatever our topics happen to be.
And typically, Paul is here in Arizona, Phoenix. And so this is good, though, because you just did a talk in Bali. Was a talk for IDI?
Parent training, and I know Paul shared a lot of his experiences and insight on how he thinks. And from what I heard, it went really well. It was very helpful to parents.
Excellent.
So I'm looking forward to hearing more when I see him. But today we actually have we have a great show planned. We have a little bit of news we're going to share, but we also have a guest, a parent guest. This mother is a parent of an adult son on the autism spectrum, and she's going to be speaking with us about her experiences raising her son. So we're very glad to have her. And then we also do have a couple of questions for the end of our show. Some of them are for Paul, and some of them are for the both of us. So looking forward to that, too. So let's get started. I found it was interesting. There's a lot of things out there in news for autism, and I picked a couple of different pieces to share. One of them has to do with a new program that is for adolescents on the spectrum. The Center on Secondary Education and also University of North Carolina's Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute came together and developed some programs for adolescents, post-high school programs, to help prepare them for whether it's college or the real world. And they're really focusing on things beyond academics. I mean, they're focusing on literacy and stuff, but also understanding emotions, developing friendships, and social problem solving. And so they're really making it a comprehensive program. And it's really exciting because they're partnering with different universities, and some other high schools are getting on board to start implementing some of their programs that encompass, all of those types, not just the academic. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting is they're also focusing on really the idea of teams and including the families, which I think is really important. Transition time for people on the spectrum is a really difficult time because, here they are expected to be going out into, the world, and a lot of times their services are also being taken away. So it's really exciting that there's a collaboration going on to, to create opportunity for these guys to get some, education and, some team approach to helping them be more prepared. And apparently this program is going to expand to more than 60 schools over the next 3 years. So it's really exciting. And it's funny, when I was looking through this, I actually know one of the people who was interviewed in here, Kara Hume. I used to work with her. I didn't realize it until I read it. But so very exciting to have that support for that population, that age group.
And I like that it approaches it from a direction of integrating those on the spectrum and those not, the normal students. So it sort of educates both sides, people on the spectrum getting to know and socialize and working on social problem solving with neurotypical people, but also exposing neurotypical people who may not be used to it to the idea of people on the spectrum and the fact that they do have capabilities. I think in their mention that students were surprised when someone on the spectrum read a passage from Julius Caesar. And I'm sitting here thinking, I know a lot of people on the spectrum who would have absolutely no problem with that. And I know that this was probably a more impaired individual, but at the same time, it really helps people in general to have exposure to autism and ASD to see that it is a wide range of ability. And that, the real solution to ASD in the everyday world is working at it from both sides.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really important. And I think it goes along with something that we try to do with our show, too, is really just help people understand and see autism differently. And so it is great to have that integration, because a lot of people, they still have, misconceptions and stuff. And so to see all that is going to be helpful on both sides, for sure. So we're excited about that. I'm going to follow up with that, in fact. I think maybe I can get somebody. I'm just talking to Paul here. Maybe I can get somebody actually as a guest organization. I'm going to follow up on that. But we also have an article related to health insurance coverage as it relates to autism. Yesterday in the Kansas City Star, there was an article that there's some legislation that's being pushed to help get coverage specifically for ABA therapy in the state. And I think one of the roadblocks it looks like they're running into is that insurance companies are seeing some of these interventions as educational versus medical. And so that's kind of a point of debate at the moment in terms of how they're going to decide to cover things. But in this article, there's a family specifically that it was talked about. Their son had a heart defect and some heart difficulties, and insurance, obviously was paying for that stuff. And then they got the autism diagnosis and found that they couldn't get any coverage. And so, the thing is, I think 33 states so far have at least partial coverage in the country. So hopefully, that will change too for Kansas.
I think though that to some degree, I can see the argument that ABA especially is more of an educational process. I mean, it's a series of tasks and rewards that is not unlike the typical classroom situation, and except the rewards are often more than just a grade. But it is true that one thing I really picked up from this article is the attitude that some of the lawmakers had about autism, that some people are like, we need to do everything we can for them, but other ones were like, well, what do they have now? Nothing, so they should be happy for anything they get. And it was sort of shocking to me that someone would have this sort of attitude about, a genuine disability. It's like, why would you say that? Why would we be like, well, be happy with what you can get? It's like, no. The difference between no help and not enough help is still people who can't live in the everyday world. Enough help is the minimum requirement, and figuring out what that requirement is a valid question. Don't tell us, be happy with what you can get. And there was another one that basically said that, he said requiring a form of specialized insurance would lead to other requests, and who's the next group to come and ask for a mandate? And it's like, should we really be saying, treating people with autism as a special interest group, it's a disability. It's a real genuine challenge that impairs the ability for people to live everyday lives. It's not, a special interest group. It's not, fans of kittens asking for a special kitten appreciation day. These are people who cannot live in the everyday world without interventions that can help them develop into, people who have the skills or tools necessary for day-to-day life. It's not a group asking for something. It's a genuine existing need. So I was kind of shocked to see the statements from the lawmakers there on it that, I wanted to be able to ask them, do you believe autism is a real thing? Because it was sort of terrifying seeing it addressed this way by some of them.
Well, I think that's the thing is, Paul, when you say as a real thing, that was the impression I got from this too, is they're not seeing it as a real, for what it is a medical problem. And so I was surprised, too, a bit by the attitude in the article as well.
Well, the bottom line is, unfortunately, this has been the great debate for quite a while with insurance and the medical community because of cost. And everyone's trying to lower cost. Insurance companies seem to have the last say on cost. And if they can, if they're in a position not to approve something, they won't approve it. And that's been the great debate. Unfortunately, many groups get hurt over that. And I guess what people can do is write their congressmen in the states or at the federal level and see what they can do to change things. But it's been this way for a long time. That's the big debate over Obamacare as well. And we'll see what happens. What do you got?
So maybe we should take a short break. When we come back, we actually have our guest on the line. She's going to talk to us about her experience raising her son on the autism spectrum.
All right, and we'll be right back. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We're live at the Regis Suite. We'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of once a month, I should say, not every second Monday. Well, that's sort of a conflict, a contradictory in terms, isn't it? Think about that, Kim. This is an English lesson now. How could it be every second Monday and of the month? That doesn't make sense, does it? Okay. Anyway, from 3 to 4, we have Kim Isaac here and Paul Loudon in Houston, Texas. And you have a guest now that has called in to the show. Why don't you introduce her?
I do have a guest. I have Vicki. She's a good friend of mine and also a mom of an adult son on the autism spectrum. Vicki, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I appreciate the chance to be here with you.
So tell us a little bit, to give listeners some background here, when was your son diagnosed with autism?
Well, he was diagnosed around 3 years and 6 months. I and my husband both had suspicions as to something was wrong and wasn't quite sure what that was at age 18 months. And it took quite a few physicians and a lot of research on our part to finally get a diagnosis of him. And at first, the diagnosis of him was PDD and OS, and I had no idea what that meant. And finally, I had a doctor discuss with me that was I aware of autism? And I said no. And she said, well, that's what I really think is the better diagnosis for your son. So
okay, and how old is he now?
He is 21.
He's 21. So he was diagnosed at 3 and a half, and he's now 21.
Yes.
Okay, when you got the diagnosis, what was your initial reaction?
I would say at first I was just, I had no idea what that meant or what that was going to mean. And I remember now looking back the first few weeks, it was pretty much, okay, he has this name attached to him, and I had another young son, so I was just going on surviving life, not sure what all that meant. That was my initial reaction, and then there was some sadness and fear.
What were some specific characteristics or behaviors that you were noticing? You said you noticed something at 18 months. What were those things?
Well, having a brother that was just a year older with him, it was probably we had a little more comparison going on there. And being siblings, there was just too much of a difference in development of milestones, walking. He did not talk, and that was a huge one. So at first, and then there some eating issues cropped up that had kind of been there as a baby, some difficulties of him, but they were showing up more and more as he got older.
So he wasn't talking at all, even at 3 and a half?
No, he was not. He had a couple of words if his dad and I were in his face in saying those words and encouraging him. He would come out with those words, but they didn't really have meaning to him other than he was getting a big reaction from mom and dad by trying to say those words. So, no, he didn't even have labels for us as mom and dad.
So what were the first things that you did once you found out he was diagnosed?
We tried some local. At the time, we were in Ohio. We've moved several places in the country, and we tried some local help, and quite honestly, they were very honest with us, is they weren't sure what to do with him. And really, there's an understanding of that at the time, even though there was starting to be more and more children recognized, the awareness and the treatments that we talk about now really weren't even come to the forefront at that time. So we finally decided to look all over the country to find something that we could put our hands around, and, you know, it's kind of like a do something, do anything. And, of course, one of the first things we did was do an behavioral program with him. And we had moved to Oregon and found some resources and started to embark on that journey.
What did you find the most difficult about raising him when he was in his younger years?
Well, I think that partly the unknown, and then when we started looking for treatments, we were very dedicated to, we decided after we calmed down, we're not going to just do things or try anything. We're going to look at things that really we see could help him develop where he had his deficits and difficulties. And obviously first one was for him was just with speech and communication. So that was hard and scary, and thinking about how to manage him. He was a runner, and around doing what we needed for him, also create as typical of life as we could and give some time to his slightly older brother.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my next questions, is how did your family, you know, sort of cope with that situation?
It was quite difficult, but what we did at a young age is really, we had a lot of love in our family, and that Alex, his brother, was mature beyond his years. Maybe he had to be, but he was, we encouraged and supported him and tried to have him involved at an age-appropriate level in things we were working on with Chris. When his dad and I really fought for a lot of services for Christopher and things we wanted to do, because his needs weren't really being answered within a school system setting, we kind of took roles. I was doing the home support and every day, and he was really doing a lot to really just fight and support for what we needed for our son at the time. So it was kind of a team effort.
Right. And did that make a difference once you organized that and designated roles for each other? Was that helpful?
It did help us a lot. As we more and more got services, then my husband became more involved in evening different activities and things we were doing for our son. So because I was doing them all day, and it is, as many parents know, it can be quite exhausting.
So were you actually doing the therapy with him as well?
I had some tutors, and just managing them at the time was a lot, and constantly filling empty positions was a lot for us, and it made for a home life that was different than I think what you would view a typical, although the older I get, I don't believe there is a typical. But yes, I did some with him in our first years of programs, and as maybe we'll get to later, that's evolved into a totally different picture with him. And I was definitely the person who was and constantly works on eating and helping him with eating issues that he has had over the years. So I did. I really spent my time. My life changed when we had him. I was staying at home, and I spent my time about his program and dealing with the situation.
Okay. Well, actually, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to fast forward a little bit and talk about how, you know, in his teen and young adult years, how things have changed, and get some of your perspective on that. So we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Okay, well, that...
Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Reidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. Just before the break, we were talking with Vicki. She's the mother of an adult son on the autism spectrum. And we were talking a little bit about life when he was first diagnosed in his younger years. Well, now he's 21 years old. And so maybe, you know, I guess some of the questions I have is, what kind of progress has he made over the years?
Well, this is the exciting part, and it gets better because there's a couple things I wanted to point out. He was, to see him now, people will say, oh, he's just high functioning in a way that he's always been. And no, he was not. He was severely autistic at 3.5 years old. Now he has such a personality. He's really working on, it's so important to him to connect to others and to find out what makes other people tick. He does speak now. As a matter of fact, many times he won't stop talking. As he got older, we did some changes in what we were doing with him because there was a piece missing. We knew that he was a very bright young man, but he did not really connect in the world. He knew a lot of information about a lot of things, but there was no interpersonal social connection, no real relationship to people. And he had a deep sadness with that. I could see it, and as he got older and he communicated that, you know, he was really struggling and that desire to connect with people came. Now he's, it's a work in progress, but he is that real personality, that sweetness, that desire to connect with people has come out with him. And I think the difference is in some of the approaches we've taken, and maybe that it was the right timing, that he, when he was older and we could clearly see that he could learn a lot of things, but that social piece was going to be so important for his happiness and just to be able to be out there in the world and in life.
So you said when he was little, so what stood out to you was, you know, he had trouble walking, he wasn't talking, he had eating difficulties. You know, now he's in a very different place. What kinds of things stand out to you now in terms of what you would say his difficulties are?
Well, he's still obviously at this point working on those communication and that confidence and understanding that there aren't scripts, there isn't a right, perfect thing to say, and that it's a dynamic situation. And so that's still for him. He still at times is looking for the right answer, but we're really working on that he understands. There's still some sensory with the eating that he could probably survive life, I think moms out there understand there's a mom thing about health, and eating is such a social thing that you don't want that to stand in the way of like traveling and doing other things because it can become difficult. So those are some of the issues and I think one of the biggest issues for me as a mom is still, even though I have to remember to take a day at a time and there's great strides being made, that I worry about that future, what's out there for him, and what will happen when I am much older and can't continue to be a support for him.
Right. Do you, I just want to go back and make sure I understood something you said about his, you know, communication and understanding. Is that, so are you saying that he still sort of expects that there's kind of one right way to say something or one right way to do something, and you're helping him to understand the flexibility aspect?
He is learning that it can go a lot of ways, but I still think somewhere in there at times, because it's his expression, it's not always flows for him, he's trying to think about what's that right thing or one thing to say. But we very much work on, and he does relationship development intervention, we very much work on that flexibility and that it's not a script. And we practice, and sometimes I will do a conversation and just a little practice, or in the car I think about different ways it could go and take it different ways so he sees too, and he experiences that, oh, you know, okay, I can do this, and there isn't a right answer. And quite honestly, many times we're guessing and assessing by what we see and what other people say as to how to respond. And I'm really working hard on that with him because he has a lot to say and a lot to offer.
What do you think now, you know, having, you know, an adult son and going through the journey, what do you think is the most common misconception about autism that people have?
I've thought about that, and I think really actually there's probably a couple. I think we're getting past the Rain Man personification because I can't tell you in his early years how many people told me they saw Rain Man, and a funny side to that is I never did. So, I think that somehow they're not capable, or this is an IQ issue. And I believe research says that if you took the autism community as a whole, you'll find, because of co-occurring conditions, but you'll find a whole range of IQs it's a very similar distribution as into a typically developing child. And also that they're not all savants either, so it kind of goes both ways, that they're really capable, and they just have to learn things a different way.
How has your personal view of autism changed over the years?
Well, I think that I developed an education in it. I've always kind of held the view that somehow, some way, we were going to support him in a way to help him to overcome his greatest difficulties. I think now every day, even though I do the worried mother thing, I know that we can really present things and teach him and continue to have breakthroughs. So I think I don't put any limits on where he'll be, and I'm not sure when he was younger that I saw that there are just great possibilities for him still, and that
so
I don't
great.
Have to put an age on it. One of the best advice I had when I did an assessment on him from a doctor who really works in the field, and is that don't put the societal deadlines on it. Like there's some magic age at 18, or he has to be here, or he has to be done with certain things, or this is an age limit. So I just don't do that.
That's so great. I think that's really, really good advice. You know, I kind of think of some of these guys as like late bloomers, you know, that they have some, you know, maybe some developmental things that, you know, they're learning and they're developing. And, you know, they I think it's great your attitude of not putting limits like that, I think is really good advice, and especially at any age, because I know working with, you know, teens and adults, sometimes families feel like because they're not little kids anymore that they shouldn't be hopeful. But it sounds like your experience is otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm in the last 3 years, I think there is a late bloomer piece to autism where you have to give them some more time for the processing and give them more opportunities. And for my son, maybe some of those opportunities that we weren't aware of how to present things to him at a younger age that we do now that just really help him to understand in a better way the social pieces of the world. And I think some of it's maturity. And, you know, some of us are kind of old souls at a young age, and some of us are big kids at 45. So I think there's just that process for him. And I see it developing and getting stronger every day with him.
That's so great. What do you think is, what are you the most proud of in your son's life?
I know you asked me that. I've thought about it. I'm just proud of him and who he is. And I also, he works hard. He works hard to grow and learn. And now at an older age, at a younger age, there wasn't as an awareness that he had some things that he had to overcome. Now there really is, and he is very in there as a piece of the puzzle to want, you know, he wants to do it. So I would tell people who have younger kids that aren't quite there yet with the maturity, as they work with them and as they get older, I think in many of them that will come, that they'll understand, they can come to understand better. And I think I'm very proud of the fact that in the last couple of years, he has just worked very hard to understand social dynamics and conversations and wants to have relationships.
That's great. That's so encouraging to hear that. And, you know, we've come to the end, actually, of our time with you, and I just want to thank you so much for being open and sharing your experiences with us.
Oh, well, you're welcome. If, you know, anybody gleans anything off of that, it's worth it, because I know as a parent it's so important to me to have a support group and have a place, have different places to get ideas and encouragement.
Well, thank you so much. And, of course, we wish you and your family and your son all the best. And maybe we'll have you back someday.
Okay, well, I would love that. So thank you. And thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to answer some questions from people who've emailed and Facebooked us different questions. And so we're going to be right back and we'll answer those for you.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Again, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking, Understanding Autism, and starring, of course, Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon from Houston, Texas. There he is right now in Houston. We're here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix. That was a great interview. It sounds like just a wonderful mom. I think most moms should have those compassionate qualities, you know, whether you're on the spectrum or not, but especially it takes probably a little bit more patience, a little bit different special qualities to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, she's wonderful. I know a lot of really amazing moms out there, and the patience that they develop is quite amazing for sure. But yeah,
and that brings up an interesting concept is, you know, and it might be one of the guests we had from Texas. She wrote a book.
Oh, Lisa Simmons.
Yeah, she was awesome, and she also has those qualities, but. But it's an interesting way to look at it sometimes is your child could be the blessing to give you special qualities to enhance, to work on. And so it's not just the parent being a parent, but what can you learn from your kids and what are they giving you? I think it's an interesting way of looking at life.
It is. It is interesting.
She was great, though.
Sure.
Yeah, I hope you have her on again. I think she can be a nice role model for other moms, other parents, dads. Caregivers.
Yeah.
On how
to get some dads actually on the show. That'll be my other.
I think that is a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think we've done that before, but we actually have some questions. And some of them are for Paul and some of them are for both of us. So I think I'm going to start with a Paul question first. Paul, this person wants to know if you have good relationships with your family members. Do you have friendships and relationships that are meaningful to you, and how do you sustain those?
That's, I guess, three questions.
I guess so. It's all in the same question line. All right, should we go one by one?
I'd say.
Yeah, take the first question.
My relationship with my family is still a bit rocky at times. You know, rebuilding trust is a slow process, but we're working on it. So I have one, but it does, you know, hit rough points at times. I do have meaningful relationship with others, but a lot of them may not be what others might recognize as meaningful relationships. I mean, you know, I have what I see as friends and people that I enjoy the company of, and I enjoy it in my way, and others might, you know, say, wait, you don't have someone you can do this with, or you don't have someone you can talk about this with, but, you know, I have what I have, and I think that I can't really answer the how do you sustain them question very well, because, you know, in a large part of their nature is that they don't feel like they need sustain. They feel sort of self-sustaining, that they sort of exist by themselves. That's what I found works for me. So, you know, I think one of the keys is not letting stereotypes or the world at large define what kind of relationships you should look for, but rather looking for the ones that meet your needs, that don't stress you, that make your time better rather than, you know, trying to make the kind of relationships that let you fit in.
That's a good answer. I have another Paul question. This one is, and it's just a one question, for real. Do you have any suggestions for teaching people on the spectrum to learn to drive?
I'm not sure about that. You know, being on the spectrum, I drive, and I have a hard time recognizing, you know, what specific challenges of driving are likely to challenge those with autism. I think that, you know, a lot of driving is sort of very concrete. It's very, very rules-based. So, but there's also a lot of unexpected things, because every other car is a person and they aren't rules-based. They do unexpected things. You know, I think my biggest frustration with driving is that is the way other people drive, that anytime I go out, you know, that's the problem I have is traffic and the unpredictability of people, because, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I can drive safely 10 or 15 over. I can drive safely doing this. I can drive safely doing that. But a large part of most traffic laws isn't really can or can't you drive safely. It's creating an environment that's predictable and orderly, so other people are like, okay, I know that cars are supposed to only come down this road at 45, so if I can't see a car back to that bend, I can safely pull out. Whereas if someone's coming down the road at 60, if you pull out and they come flying around that bend at 60, they may still hit you because they don't have enough time to slow down. So, you know, one of those things is working on that flexibility of knowing that just because there are rules and laws to how you move on the road, and just because you should be moving by them, you cannot trust other people to be moving by them. So I guess that's what I'd say for teaching someone on the spectrum to drive, is making sure that they're mentally flexible enough to understand that other people don't follow the rules.
Paul, does that – I know every state would be different, but is there a question on applying for a driver's license regarding autism, and do you know of? And do you know of any states that restrict people?
As far as I know, the only restrictions on licenses typically are, is your eyesight good enough? So
yeah.
Other than that, I don't think so. And typically,
okay.
I think that, you know, any person on the spectrum who is capable of living on their own or going to high school probably should be allowed to drive. I mean, I think that basically, if you can manage your life that much, you can probably manage driving. I mean, there's going to be some limits. Like, if they go to high school, but they have to have someone who's constantly attending them the whole time they're there, that's a little different. But I think anyone who is given the flexibility to act independently, you know, it's like, you know, you're given a learner's permit in Texas at – well, actually, I don't know if the rules have changed. When I was growing up, you could get a learner's permit at 15 and your license at 16. And the judgment on that isn't really about your age, but the assumption that most people will be mature enough by that age to make individual decision-making processes. And I think the same is true. If you're developed enough to go to school on your own, or if you're developed enough to go to college on your own, or if you're developed enough to hold a job on your own, you probably sort of – have some of the same skills that are necessary for learning to drive. So I think that, you know, there really shouldn't be a question, you know, do you have autism or anything like that? And it should really just be a case of, can you pass the driving test, or can you, you know, meet the other physical requirements for driving?
Yeah, and then, of course, just to qualify, make sure, of course, if you're on the spectrum, know the state laws and address them with each, you know, when you're there trying to get your license, because we are not experts of driver's license across the nation. So everyone, just a little caution, make sure you know the state laws. And
the legal disclaimer.
Yeah, that's a CYA letter.
Yeah, actually I was just thinking about too. Is
yeah, because we don't know.
Well, that too. And then I just thought of here, being in Arizona, our license, they give us like a 40-year window
before we have to renew.
Probably go check, though, and see what's changed. I mean, since the last time I was in to get that license, it's not a bad idea.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's been updated.
Like California, I think, is 2 or 4 years. But I was shocked. I think it was 15 years I got my license for. That's
yeah,
weird.
Texas, that's strange. Texas, I think it's 2, 4, or 6 years, but you don't know what you're going to get until it shows up in the mail, and then you're like, oh, I got 6 years this time. I don't have to go back soon. Or, dread, I got 2. I'm going to have to go back in another year and a half, you know?
Yeah, usually you're not happy when you get 6 years, but 2 years is good.
No, but my license,
other, now, other context,
my license now expires in 2042.
That's crazy. Man.
I know. When I go to the airport,
yeah.
2042.
Yeah, that's what they do in Arizona. We don't have to go as nearly as often. But anyway, the
point is, overall, I think people on the spectrum, you know, I think that if you do have basic skills, then you can probably learn to drive. And that, you know, it's going to be different from individual to individual. But, you know, I think that it's one of those things that, you know, it really gives you a level of independence that is healthy to have. So where applicable, it's a good thing to try to work on. And maybe take your time with it. You know, if you notice them having troubles driving in the parking lot, you know, don't make it like we have to teach you to drive, but rather if they want to, look for ways to make that possible.
You're right. Wow, the show has flown by. This is a great show today. I really enjoyed your guest. Vicki, I believe her name was. Paul, it's always nice hearing from you. You'll be on again tomorrow, of course, Understanding Autism, tomorrow, Tuesday, 3 to 4. And what topic do we have tomorrow?
We are talking about, we have another guest who's going to share his experiences in the workplace, in corporate America. He's an adult on the spectrum, and he's going to come in and
tell us
all about that.
That should be great. That's always good first-hand experience. Paul Allen, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay, excellent. And Kim, thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same station, Understanding Autism. Kimberly Isaac, Paul Allen, Dave Isaac, signing off.